From LinkedIn News, I'm Leah Smart, host of Everyday Better, an award-winning weekly podcast dedicated to personal development. Whether you're looking for ways to shift your mindset or seeking more fulfillment in your life, we've got you covered. Join me as we dive into captivating stories and research-backed ideas that have empowered me and others to lead lives with more clarity and intention. Everyday Better, making growth an everyday practice. Listen to Everyday Better on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Jesse Hempel, host of the Hello Monday podcast. In my 20s, I knew what career success looked like. In midlife, it's not that simple. Work is changing, we are changing, and there's no guidebook for how to make sense of it. Start your week with the Hello Monday podcast. Listen to Hello Monday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome. It is a special Sunday edition of Verdict with Senator Ted Cruz, Ben Ferguson with you. And I want to let you know, Monday's podcast is going to be very important after Israel was attacked by Iran. I also want to remind you of what Senator Cruz and I predicted was going to happen when Democrats in the Biden administration abandoned Israel and said no to giving them funding and what they needed when it came to arms. Democrats voting against this, which is truly shocking. That is part one. The other part about this that we're going to cover on Monday, and it's going to be very important, is the fact that there were warnings from Senator Cruz and others. You cannot give money to the number one state sponsor of terrorism in the world, Iran. And that is exactly what Obama did, and it's exactly what Joe Biden has done. We freed up billions of dollars that we allowed Iran to get their hands on. We also talked about the Iranian oil embargo. We've allowed Iran to get around those embargoes, to skirt those embargoes, which is the part that is also extremely shocking with everything that we're talking about today. So I'm going to go back and I'm going to play for you a podcast that we did that talked exactly about Schumer and the Democrats blocking emergency funding for Israel. This was the moment where Iran knew that they could attack Israel. They realized that the president was weak and that the president would not respond and that the president was criticizing Israel instead of criticizing Iran and Hamas and Hezbollah. This, again, is an important pod that we did. And I remind you, you do not want to miss tomorrow, Monday mornings as well. We will have all of the senators' reaction to what just happened with Iran attacking Israel, not through their proxies, directly attacking them. We'll have all of that for you coming up on Monday morning's pod. Until then, take a listen to this podcast we did about Chuck Schumer, the Democrats blocking emergency funding to Israel, which was the moment that Iran knew they could get away with this. I want to talk about this vote that happened where every single Senate Democrat just voted to block aid to Israel on a day when 200,000 plus came to the steps of the Capitol to support Israel. This was shocking that every one of them said no.
Well, that's exactly right. Today was a momentous day, and look, I spent this afternoon down at the mall with the March for Israel, and we had hundreds of thousands of people from all over America descend on Washington and stand together for Israel, and it was inspirational. I spent a lot of time down there just hugging people and encouraging them and taking pictures and saying thank you, and the spirit of unity. I mean, we've seen over the last month, the nastiness we've seen, the vicious anti-Semitism we've seen, the hatred for Israel we've seen has been really horrifying. And the March for Israel was spectacular to be a part of. And then after that, I came back to Capitol Hill, and a group of us, a group of senators decided, okay, enough is enough. We are going to force a vote on military aid to Israel right now. So, as you know, what happened, the House of Representatives took up and passed a clean Israel aid bill, $14 billion in emergency military aid for Israel. The Biden White House wants to tie that military aid to Ukraine and also more broadly to their efforts to increase illegal immigration. They call it, in a very Orwellian term, border security funding, but it's designed not to secure the border at all, instead to increase illegal immigration, to accelerate the time for processing, to spend more money to putting illegal immigrants on trains and planes and buses to send them to every city in America. And so the Biden White House is cynically trying to tie Israel aid to all of that. The House of Representatives did the right thing, something we've called for on this podcast. Break Israel funding off and vote for it free and clear. Now, when the House did that, they decided to be fiscally responsible. They decided to pay for it. I think that's the right thing to do. And so the way they paid for the $14 billion is rescinding funding that the Democrats had previously passed into law to hire 87,000 new IRS agents designed to harass small businesses, harass middle-class families, to be used as an army to go after the enemies of this administration. So
you mentioned that the vote and the numbers here, there's some people that are going to be looking at these numbers. It's very, very tight, this vote. It was obviously a party line vote. How on earth is it that not a single Democrat would come over and stand with Israel on this? Or was this just a, hey, we as a Democratic Party, we always vote together, even if it screws Israel? I mean, this is one of the most tone deaf votes I've ever witnessed. While there's literally 200,000 plus people on the Mall standing with Israel in a nonpartisan way.
Look, this vote was a demonstration of what I describe at great length in my brand new book, Unwoke, How to Defeat Cultural Marxism in America. By the way, if you haven't bought it, go on to Amazon right now and buy the book, because this vote today was a manifestation of that. Today's Democrats, they don't give a damn about substance. They care about power. And because the corrupt corporate media will not report on what they say, they are not accountable for what they do. So here's what happens. This is one of the moments where this podcast is unusual, because I want to bring you inside the procedural maneuvering in the Senate in a way that frankly, there's no other news source that provides that. So I came back from the March for Israel about 4 p.m. on the Capitol, and I got a text as I was driving back to the Capitol from Roger Marshall. Roger Marshall, Republican from Kansas, good friend. He said, a bunch of us are meeting to try to force a vote on Israel funding right now. So I deviated. I was going to go to my office. I deviated to go to the Senate floor. I was there with other conservatives, people like Mike Lee, who is my closest friend in the Senate, a number of others, and we were strategizing about how we can force a vote. And in particular, there's a procedural method called filing a rogue cloture petition. And what that means is any 16 senators can file a cloture petition, which is a petition to force a vote on something, and can basically hijack the Senate floor from the Senate Majority Leader. And it is a procedural mechanism that is very, very rarely used, because both Schumer and McConnell hate it. So McConnell had repeatedly urged us, do not use this mechanism, because the Majority Leader should be able to control the entire agenda, and it's a mistake to let the minority hijack the agenda. Well, look, I understand that procedural point. It's not crazy as a day-to-day operation of the Senate. But here, the House had passed emergency military aid for Israel, and Chuck Schumer had announced, we will not vote on it. He would block the Senate from voting on it. It was literally, Schumer was single-handedly preventing a vote on emergency military aid for Israel. And it's because he wants, number one, he's not willing to give up the funding for the army of 87,000 new IRS agents. He values harassing the political enemies of the White House more than military aid for Israel. And number two, he wants to tie it to all the political priorities of Democrats and hold that military aid hostage.
Let me ask you this question about this funding, because this is a fight that we did not see. everybody jumped on the yes bandwagon when it came to military aid for Ukraine. Democrats had no problem jumping on that as well. And you didn't have to figure out a way to try to bring this vote up. What is the logic when you're talking to Democrats, your colleagues in the Senate, how can they be so hell-bent and gung-ho on unlimited funding for Ukraine, but no on something as simple as defending our actual ally, Israel?
So Democrats, number one, recognize that all the Republicans strongly support military aid for Israel. So they see that cynically as a political opportunity. Good. This is something Republicans want. Let's hold it hostage. But number two, listen, Democrats are worried about their left flank. They're getting blasted by the anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, radical anti-Semitic left, the Squad. And so they're all nervous. And so what ended up happening, it's why Schumer didn't want to vote. He didn't want to force Democrats to vote on it. And he felt like he had exquisite power. Now, Schumer screwed up. The majority leader can prevent what we did today. The way the majority leader prevents what we did today is he files a pending motion to proceed to something. And under the Senate procedural rules, that pending motion to proceed to some bill blocks another motion to proceed to a bill. And so that's something. When Senate Republicans had a majority, Mitch McConnell did every day. He did that to block the Democrats from doing what we did. Well, Schumer was lazy. He didn't do that. So the floor was wide open. And so what happened is a group of us, we had 11 Senate Republicans. We met off the floor of the Senate. You needed 11 to force a voice vote. And so we gathered there on the side of the Senate. And we're talking about, okay, we're going to force this. And we're doing this surreptitiously. This is like 4 p.m. Tuesday afternoon. We then all went to the Senate cloakroom and we were waiting. And actually, John Kennedy was giving an extended speech. And we wanted Roger Marshall as the one who had the idea initially to go forward. So Mike Lee and I and others were backing Roger. And we needed to get the floor because the Senate Democrats were starting to get wind of what we were trying to do. And at one point, Chuck Schumer's lead floor aide on the Senate, his sort of lead staffer, he came and stuck his head in the Republican cloakroom, and he looks around and he sees 11 of us sitting there, and he kind of looks around and he doesn't quite say this out loud, but everything is in his expression goes, oh shit. Like, yeah. he knew this. He had figured out what we were trying to do. And so we went, actually Rand Paul, who was part of the group, Rand went down to John Kennedy, who was giving a speech in another matter, and Rand interrupted him. He's like, John Kennedy's on C-SPAN giving a speech, and Rand said, John, we really need you to stop right now. It's an emergency. Please stop. And John didn't even know what we were doing, but he's like, okay. So he stops. Roger Marshall goes down and he gets recognized. So getting recognized, once you're recognized, you have the floor. You have power. And so Roger goes down and he moves to proceed to the House bill. So the House bill is what they passed. It is $14 billion in emergency military funding for Israel, paid for by rescinding the IRS additional funding for 87,000 agents. Once he did that, the Democrats are in panic. They're like, oh, crap, oh, crap, oh, crap, oh, crap. And so Raphael Warnock, the Democrat from Georgia, he was down there. Now, procedurally, once Roger moves to proceed to the bill, he has relinquished the floor. It's a jump ball at that point, because to move to proceed to it, the presiding officer instructs the clerk to read the title of the bill. So Roger no longer has the floor.
Can I ask you a cynical question real quick?
Yes.
How many senators have no idea how this works, what you're describing right now?
About 90.
Okay, that's the reason why this story is amazing to me, because I'm like, I bet you the majority of the senators that you serve with don't know this is the rules of the Senate and how this would work.
Yeah. No, it's only a handful of senators that understand the rules. So Roger moves. When he makes the motion, he's relinquished the floor. And so what happened then, as soon as the clerk has read the title of the bill, Roger says, Mr. President, the presiding officer was Senator Welch from Vermont. He was there. Roger calls out Mr. President, but Raphael Warnock, liberal Democrat from Georgia, calls out Mr. President as well. Now, the presiding officer, when you got multiple people asking to be recognized, has the option to pick who to decide. And so because he's a Democrat, Welch recognizes Warnock. Warnock stands up and says, I suggest the absence of a quorum. Now, what that means, this is getting in the weeds, but this is one of the cool things about this podcast. It takes you inside the Senate. Under the Senate rules, when any senator suggests the absence of a quorum, there is a mandatory quorum call. What it means is there are not enough senators on the floor right now to conduct business. It is a way to freeze the Senate, to lock it in paralysis, because once you're in a quorum call, you can do nothing else. And so Warnock pushed us into a quorum call. At that point, we're there, and there are more than 11 of us that are there. We proceeded over the next hour, periodically, one after the other, we'd grab the microphone, we'd stand up and say, "Mr. President, I ask unanimous consent to vitiate the quorum call." That's a way to say, end the quorum call, let's vote on this damn thing. And over and over again, we did this like 30 times, Democrats would object. They'd say, I object. Now, you can do that forever. They could keep us in a quorum call, but it meant they were stuck. And so we were brainstorming, okay, how can they avoid a vote? We went up to them and said, look, what we want is a roll call vote where every senator has to go on record. Do you support funding for Israel or do you oppose funding for Israel? After about 2 hours, and I cannot overstate, Ben, how upset Chuck Schumer was, how upset the Democrats were. We blindsided them. They did not expect this. This hit them out of nowhere. And then they finally said, screw it. We're going to force through the vote. So we voted. And it was a straight party line vote. So understand, every single Democrat voted against emergency military funding for Israel. Chuck Schumer, who calls him the defender of Israel, that's what he calls himself, voted against emergency military funding for Israel. John Tester, who's running for re-election in Montana, voted against emergency funding for Israel. Sherrod Brown, who's running for re-election in Ohio, voted against emergency funding for Israel. Bob Casey, who's running for re-election in Pennsylvania, voted against emergency funding for Israel. Jackie Rosen, who's running for re-election in Nevada, voted against emergency funding for Israel. Tammy Baldwin, who's running for re-election in Wisconsin, voted against emergency funding for Israel. And the amazing thing has been, it was a straight party line vote, which means every single one of those Democrats I named was the deciding vote. Literally, if one Democrat had voted with us, this was a 50-vote threshold. So one Democrat could have passed this. But every Democrat voted no. And it was a moment of clarity. And I think a moment of clarity that will come down to the election next year, where the Democrats have made clear that partisan politics matters more to them than standing with Israel right now.
Senator, you mentioned that any one Democrat could have moved the pendulum here and funded Israel. And if you don't have to name names per se, but are you shocked? I mean, there are some Democrats that I truly believe are, quote, friends of Israel. I am shocked that not one of them did the right thing here and truly stood with Israel. They just said no, party over even Israel. And what is referred to is emergency funding, meaning yeah, they need it now.
Look, this was, I think, a spectacularly foolish vote by Democrats. I mean, you had Kyrsten Sinema was the deciding vote against emergency aid to Israel. Bob Menendez, who right now is in the midst of a very serious indictment and a serious scandal, but he's on the ballot in November. He was the deciding vote against emergency aid to Israel. Dick Blumenthal, Ben Cardin, all sorts of Democrats who hold themselves out as defenders of Israel. Every one of them, literally one of them, could say, you know what? We need emergency aid to Israel now, and I don't care what my party leadership says. I'm not going to do it. But they decided, they cracked the whip. And I'll tell you, on the flip side, listen, it was not easy to hold every Republican. So I was down on the Senate floor for about 2.5 hours this afternoon, and I was whipping Republicans. And listen, Republican leadership was pissed. I cannot overstate how angry they were. And the reason is our leadership said, listen, if you do this, when Republicans have the majority, Democrats will use this tool to try to hijack the floor. And that's a reasonable procedural point. I get that. It's not crazy. That being said, I think the crisis in Israel is so dire, the position of the Democrats is so indefensible, that it made sense to force it. And so we did it. But when we're voting on it, there were a number of Republicans close to leadership who delayed their vote and delayed their vote and delayed their vote. And I was talking to them personally, and I was saying, please, please vote to do the right thing. Because if we ended up with a vote where you had all the Democrats and two or three or five Republicans, it would totally blur the distinction. They could say there's a bipartisan vote against this procedural game. That's what the Democrats would say. And so I was begging Republicans, please, this is something I get. You don't like the procedural mechanism that we forced this vote, but we did. Once we did, let's actually be united and be team players. And miraculously, look, it was close. And I was talking to staffers. I was talking to members. I was lobbying. I was on the, in the well of the Senate, working vote by vote by vote. We got every single Republican, 100%. That was a big deal because it means that each and every Democrat, there is not a Democrat in the Senate who was not the deciding vote on this motion. And that is a big deal for clarity. And I want to underscore something, Ben. You asked a minute ago, why would Democrats do this? And part of me was shocked. By the way, Joe Manchin, who's not running for re-election, he voted against military funding for Israel. He could have been the deciding vote, but he figured, I guess, screw it. I'm leaving the Senate, so who cares? Part of the reason Democrats do this, while we were voting, I looked up in the Senate gallery. There were four reporters up in the Senate gallery. We'll see how many headlines are published about Senate Democrats block military funding for Israel, but my guess is very, very few. We went out and tried to talk to reporters. I didn't see the 6 o'clock news tonight, so I don't know this for a fact, but I'd be willing to bet you $100 right now, and I'm cheap. I don't bet $100 on many things.
That's right.
I'd bet you $100 that none of the major networks covered that Senate Democrats tonight blocked funding for Israel. And this is why, look, this is the point in my book, Unwoke, which you ought to go online and buy right now. This is why I focus so much on the corrupt corporate media. Because the corrupt corporate media, they're not covering news. They are partisan advocates. They don't want aid to Israel to pass. They are cheering for Hamas. Many of the corrupt corporate media are openly cheering for Hamas. And so Democrats can cast spectacularly foolish votes and know their constituents will never know about it. Dick Blumenthal, Democrat from Connecticut, he holds himself out as one of the leading defenders of Israel. Well, he is absolutely certain when he goes to Connecticut, none of his voters will know that he was the deciding vote that blocked emergency military aid to Israel. Why? Because the corrupt corporate media won't tell them.
You, Senator, have said this several times, and it's a very accurate statement. You say if lawyers never ask a question of somebody if they don't already know the answer. That rule applies, I think, to taking things to the floor of the Senate for a vote, right? Don't call a vote if you don't know what the outcome's going to be. And yet this today seems to be one of those incredibly authentic moments. Was it inspired because of the 200,000 plus that came to Capitol Hill to stand with Israel? And that's where this kind of started, where it was like, you know what? We got to do something today. And let's just see if we can get it done. And no, we haven't called everybody beforehand. And this is an organic moment in the
yep.
Senate.
Look, for me, it certainly was. I can't speak to the other Republican senators, but I came literally from the March on Washington. I was down there hugging and supporting so many incredible heroes and Jewish Americans who came from all over the country to come to the mall to stand in solidarity. And I came back and I heard several of my colleagues were thinking of this. And I was like, absolutely, let's go to the floor right now. Let's do it. And so I leaned in aggressively. And I got to say, it was striking. Number one, the absolute panic among Senate Democrats was striking. But sadly, the panic among Senate Republican leadership, they didn't like that we did this either. But I think it provided an absolute moment of clarity. And let me be clear. What I hoped would happen is that we would vote to provide the military aid to Israel. By the way, if one Democrat, if even one, if Bob Casey, if Jackie Rosen, if John Tester, if Sherrod Brown, if even one Democrat had voted with us, this bill would have passed and we would have sent it to Joe Biden's desk tonight. So Joe Biden could have signed it this evening and sent $14 billion to Israel Tuesday night.
Wow.
I didn't know if that would happen. I actually wasn't sure they could hold their votes. And part of the reason they locked up the floor in a quorum call for a couple hours
is I assume they were whipping their votes. They called the people that they thought were wobbly votes. They said, okay, Schumer wants you to vote to screw Israel. Are you okay with that? And I think every Democrat said, yep, good by me. I'm good by that. And it just, I got to say, if the shoe were on the other foot, if it were Republican leadership asking Republicans to cast a vote like that, I wouldn't do it. And a whole bunch of us wouldn't. And yet the Democrats, this is where I cannot overstate the impact of the corrupt corporate media. Part of the reason Republicans wouldn't do it is our voters will know if we cast a terrible vote.
Yeah, it would literally cost several senators their job the next election.
The Democrats feel utterly and completely immune. They know that CNN has their back. They know that ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, they won't cover it. They won't report on it. They'll ignore it. They'll bury it. And the New York Times, they're not going to cover it because they don't want to cover it, because they're more interested in the left-wing partisan agenda than they are in actually covering the news.
Senator, I want to move to another issue, and it deals with Israel, but it's in a different capacity, and that is the shock of anti-Semitism on college campuses. MIT now is facing backlash for not expelling anti-Israel protesters over what they refer to as visa issues. They said they originally threatened to expel these pro-Palestinian protesters. And then afterwards, they're like, OK, we're going to come back on this. We're going to pull back on this and say, never mind, because these people, if we pull them from school, it will have visa issues, regardless of how extreme these protesters were. This is shocking to see them coming back from this. Yet that's exactly what now has happened at MIT. Your reaction?
Well, listen, what happened at MIT was absolutely disgraceful. MIT, by any measure, is one of the finest educational institutions on the face of the planet. It may be the greatest scientific, technical university in the world. And what has happened in the last several days is that numerous Jewish students were forced to stay home from classes. They could not attend classes. Why? Because anti-Israel, anti-Semitic protesters threatened them, physically threatened them. And the students said they felt unsafe. They felt like going to class would endanger their personal safety. Now, that is insane. And any normal university, if one student threatens another student, threatens their safety, and prevents them from going to class, whoever makes that threat should be expelled. If you are harassing Jewish students because you're an anti-Semite bigot, you should be expelled. And by the way, to be clear, if someone was harassing Muslim students and preventing Muslim students from going to class, they should be expelled. No student has a right to harass and threaten fellow students. Well, what happened at MIT is this harassment occurred and Jewish students stayed home, and the university administrators backed away and refused to take the natural step of expelling them. Why? Because these rabid anti-Semitisms were there, Semites were there on student visas, and if they got expelled, they'd get sent back home. And the university said, well, okay, if you were an American, we would punish you. But because you're not an American, because you're a guest, because we've welcomed you to our country to get an education, you can conduct harassment and bigoted racist threatening of other students, and we will just turn a blind eye and give you a pat on the back.
At CNN, there truly seems to be a civil war inside of CNN right now, because if you watch the morning show, it's like all Hamas propaganda and anti-Semitism. You watch their primetime lineup at night, it goes right back to that. There was a moment, and I want to give credit here to Jake Tapper. Jake Tapper had on an MIT graduate student and let her tell her story to the world. And I want you to hear what she had to say. It was, and I'm glad that he used his program for good. He had the headline, Hate in America, MIT student speaks out about anti-Semitism on campus. Listen to this.
As a Jewish student at MIT, do you feel safe on campus?
You know, honestly, Jake, in the past few weeks, I have not felt safe on campus.
Why not?
So, you know, ever since October 7th, we've seen at universities around the country that, you know, the conflict that's overseas has come to our home turf. And we've had a lot of rallies and events by an organization called the Coalition Against Apartheid, which is the anti-Israel group on MIT's campus. And they, along with some local anti-Israel groups, have come to campus because MIT is an open campus, which means that anybody can walk around and, you know, be on campus. So they together have done protests on campus on the steps of Lobby 7, which is the main entrance to MIT, and in front of the Student Center.
And, I mean, people protest, but what do they do? What do they say that makes you feel unsafe?
So I guess part of it is the fact of what they're saying. So when you're saying things like globalize the intifada, and use your two fists to sacrifice everything for Palestine, and one solution, intifada, you know, we know what happened during the second intifada. It was suicide bombings and attacks against Israeli civilians in Israel. But the other part of it is that these people aren't just protesting outside and exercising the right to free speech, which I fully support as an American. It's that they're going, you know, they went to the personal offices of a program that runs Israel internships on MIT's campus. And they went to the offices of the people who work for this program and they tried to enter. They were going from door to door trying to unlock the doors. And the people who worked in this office had no idea what these students were trying to do by trying to get into their office. They were yelling, they were accusing them of apartheid, of ethnic cleansing, of genocide. And it was a really frightening experience.
A really frightening experience. You hear this student saying this, and yet this is happening to them. And as you described a moment ago, they said, if you keep doing this, we're going to expel you. Then they said, oh, never mind. Just kidding. You're just going to be in trouble, but you're not going to get expelled because we don't want you to lose your visa. That's anti-Semitism and accepting this type of abuse by these individuals.
Well, that's right. And let me quote from Fox News, had an article about this where they quoted conservative lawyer Maria Medvin. And she said, quote, MIT is one of the most prestigious universities in the U.S. these days. Foreigners make up about 30% of the MIT student body. Jewish students, on the other hand, make up about 6% of the MIT student body, a campus minority. So think about it right now. Now, I will admit it is somewhat concerning that 30% of the MIT student body are foreigners, but especially if these are foreigners that are vicious bigots, that are anti-Semites, that are willing to threaten, harass, and threaten physical violence against their fellow students, their Jewish students, because they hate them so much, they should be expelled. If you threaten physical violence against a fellow student, if you block them from going to class, that should be a no-brainer reason for expulsion. And the administrators, look, why did the administrators not expel them? And again, this goes back to what I talk about in my new book, Unwoke. This is cultural Marxism. The administrators, the cultural Marxists, side with the people they have decided are the victims, the Palestinians, over the people they have decided that they are the oppressors, the Jews. And so for the radical left, threats of violence against Jews are okay. It is acceptable. And so, listen, the fact that someone's on a student visa, they ought to behave better, not worse. It shouldn't be the case that Americans are held to stricter standards than foreigners coming to study in our universities. And yet MIT says, well, if we expelled you, you'd lose your student visa, so we're not going to expel you. Please continue to harass and threaten and threaten physical violence to our students because, you know, we, the administrators, don't give a damn about the Jewish students because in the cultural Marxist world, they're the oppressors, so to heck with them.
Yeah, to the heck with them. And I will say, we better stand up for these students and the and hold these, and I hope donors, I really do, and the people that give to these universities are paying attention to what these universities are doing.
Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely right. It's one of the things that is freaking universities out, is that donors are cutting off the cash. And that is, it's the one thing that's getting them attention. And listen, I want to actually quote from one of the best known poems. First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. Look, I think that applies to our universities right now. If there's anyone at a university, a student, a professor, an administrator who gives a damn about equal rights, about protection, about stopping anti-Semitism, about stopping bigotry, about stopping hate, speak out now. If you're a donor and you write a check to these schools, speak out now and say not one penny more until you protect the students on our campus. You cannot give in to the violent Marxist radicals and expect us to continue to support these schools. This is a time for choosing right now.
Senator, lastly, I want to play for you, and just so people understand what's happening at MIT, this is just some of the student videos have gone viral online. They're chanting Infatada, and the Jewish students are stuck inside, were physically prevented from attending class by this hostile group of pro-Hamas and anti-Israel MIT students that call themselves the CAA. Then another student came out and showed another video of these massive protests, and this is what it sounded like. Senator, they were doing this and they knew where many of the Jewish students were when they went to these buildings to protest just to scare these Jewish students. I leave everybody with that audio and I want to get your final words on this because this is clearly organized. It's being funded by someone, Senator. The MIT is what they refer to as an open campus where outside groups can come in. This is orchestrated by these extremist anti-Israel groups. Somebody has to be paying for this, funding this, and then they are targeting where the Jewish students are in these schools. And it's not just MIT. This is happening on other college campuses.
So the second Intifada in Israel was a series of suicide bombings carried out by Palestinian assailants. And it resulted in, it took place between 1987 and 1993. And it had a combined casualty figure of roughly 1,000 Israelis, 3,000 Palestinians, and 64 foreign nationals.
Wow.
And so when these radicals are cheering and chanting for another Intifada, they're calling for murdering more Jews. Now, mind you, on October 7th, we saw 1,200 Israeli civilians targeted by Hamas death squads and murdered because they are Israelis. And these protesters are chanting, they want another Intifada. In other words, you haven't murdered enough Jews. We want more Jews murdered. That's what they're chanting. And listen, if you're a Jewish student at MIT or at another one of these elite universities where these radical leftists have taken over, it is understandable that you are afraid for your own safety. This is disgraceful. And every university that allows this to happen is failing in their obligation to keep their students safe. No student, everyone has a right to free speech. No student has a right to threaten physical violence against other students to prevent students from going to class. And that's what these radicals are doing at MIT. And right now, the MIT administration is complicit in this terrorizing of Jewish students. It's disgraceful.
Senator, it's always a pleasure, especially on shows like this that I think are so important. I would ask all of you listening, please help spread the word by sharing this podcast on your social media, wherever you are. Write us a 5-star review. It helps us on the charts reach new listeners when they put the charts out on Apple and other services. And most importantly, go out there and grab the Senator's new book. It is an incredible read for the holidays. Unwoke, it is out right now. And there's so much that the Senator is talking about tonight that is really talked about in this book. I've read it. It's amazing. Make sure you grab that on Amazon as well. The Senator and I will see you back here in a couple of days.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Leah Smart, host of Everyday Better, an award-winning weekly podcast dedicated to personal development. Whether you're looking for ways to shift your mindset or seeking more fulfillment in your life, we've got you covered. Join me as we dive into captivating stories and research-backed ideas that have empowered me and others to lead lives with more clarity and intention. Everyday Better, making growth an everyday practice. Listen to Everyday Better on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Jesse Hempel, host of the Hello Monday podcast. In my 20s, I knew what career success looked like. In midlife, it's not that simple. Work is changing, we are changing, and there's no guidebook for how to make sense of it. Start your week with the Hello Monday podcast. Listen to Hello Monday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.